This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and this is the New World Report with my colleague Joseph Umar, the executive director of Secure Free Society. We turn to Peru. The recent election, very dramatic and a lengthy process because the two candidates were very close. The counting from overseas from the diaspora was delayed. Finally, the recognition of Pedro Castillo, a new candidate and a new president, never elected to a political office at this level before, perhaps ever. However, Mr. Castillo making promises, as politicians do, especially when they're newly on the stage, to the poorest, the campesinos, the farmers of Peru. At the same time, Mr. Castillo leading a government that identifies with socialism, populism, that is, redistributing the wealth of Peru, which is heavily based on mining, almost dominantly based on mining. And what we now have is conflict between the populist campaigning of Mr. Castillo and the actual practices of the government. Joseph, I understand correctly, the new cabinet, the new government, is looking very carefully at raising the percentage of profits, of fees that it charges the mining companies that are extracting a great deal of necessary raw materials out of Chile, raising it dramatically, tying it to the profits year to year. That is all well and good. That is to be expected. And we talked about how companies had hard questions about what kind of government Castillo was going to run. At this point, I believe there's no clarity. China's involved, Europe's involved, the largest mining companies in the world are involved. How do you read their response to Castillo? Is this now, are they translating what was campaign promises into hard facts? And is this a negotiation that's going well, in your opinion?
Well, John, I think what we're starting to see is now we're starting to see the reality of a new government in Peru that has to face not just, the political situation, but they have to face the reality of their economy. And I think President Castillo is going to have to now understand how he's going to be able to maximize revenue so that he doesn't be able to come into a situation where he's going to have a humanitarian crisis as a suppressed economy as many countries in Latin America are facing right now. One of the things that happened recently was the resignation by his foreign minister, his recently appointed foreign minister, who only lasted about 19 days. And this was, I think, maybe one of the things that is in negotiations with the mining industry or just the general private sector, because there was a lot of concern about the foreign minister. He, Hector Bahar, he's a former guerrilla leader that's trained in Cuba. He was one of the co-founders of the ELN terrorist group in Colombia. He was incarcerated back in the 60s for sedition. He was basically a very problematic appointment for not just being a hardline communist, but also for being very close to narco terrorists. And imagine that's going to be your representation to the international community, your foreign minister. That caused a lot of concern. In fact, the day that he was announced, the day that Hector Bahar was announced as the foreign minister, among others in the cabinet of Castillo, Peru's stock market dropped about 6%. Its currency posted one of its biggest one-day losses, I think, in about 7 years. And a lot of that was the mining companies. A lot of it was the mining companies getting very concerned that the Castillo government was going to, at worst case, nationalize the industry. But even before that, perhaps try to seek more rent-seeking measures to be able to exploit more taxes from them. They already pay a lot of taxes to the Peruvian government. So I think that this is one of the things that the test is going to be whether Castillo can balance this. I'm not very optimistic. I would actually look to Bolivia to get a sense of what Castillo is going to do, where they didn't go full nationalization, but they definitely steered the mining community to essentially work more closely with the government and then kind of pick the winners and losers to be able to say which mining companies can succeed and which mining companies cannot.
There are two voices here, at least two voices in the cabinet. I recall that some days ago, the new finance minister, Pedro Franchi, who I understand was appointed to put a moderate face on the cabinet, was looking to work with the mining companies. And then there were harsh confrontational remarks about how much the new Peruvian government would extract from the mining companies. So I leave that only momentarily to turn to the other issue, which is the complaint by the farmers that they're expecting redistribution, genuine redistribution. that meaning that their poverty is to be alleviated by the funds that the new government extract from the mining companies. In addition, there are complaints that seem mundane but are not for farmers, that in the mining region, the trucks create an enormous amount of dust that settles on the crops and damages the harvest for the farmers. These are the most rudimentary farmers in Peru. Castillo is then being pulled in two directions, and that would be difficult for a practiced politician. Has this happened before, Joseph? This is the first time I've ever studied a Peruvian election. Do they make promises in Lima that the farmers know will be ignored once they're in power?
Yeah, there's been plenty of times in Peru where the president has been put in two different directions and has abandoned, you know, his populace or his base, or in this case, the farming community. I think really with the test of whether Castillo is going to do what many are fearing he's going to do is whether he aligns himself with the sindicatos or the unions, nations that run almost like a mafia inside Peru, and essentially lean towards more state intervention in those those economic sectors, particularly the mining sector, and then that's essentially going to empower these groups to be able to have more political power. So I think that's the real test of whether he's going to move in that direction or whether he's going to move in the opposite direction, which is where Peru was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And one of the reasons Peru went from a country that was struggling very severely economically with also the violence that was going on in the country to becoming one of the most rising economies in South America during the early part of the 21st century, Peru was considered to be the dragon of South America as its economy was growing between 8% annually. A lot of that was the boom in the commodity cycle. The mining industry really did a lot, and that did a lot for Peru's economy. So I think that this is where Castillo is going to have to really see if he can balance that effort. He obviously doesn't want to lose his political base, but at the same time, he wants to have an economy that's functioning. My concern, as we were talking, John, is that, you know, he's got these different influences, but it hasn't been clear to me, at least yet, even with the resignation of Hector Bejar, is where does Vladimir Cerrón sit? So Vladimir Cerrón is the head of his political party. He was, and many people in Peru attributed him as kind of the brainchild behind President Castillo, the one that got him to the presidential victory. So the question is, where does he hasn't been appointed in any official capacity in the government. He's still the head of the political party, but he's very close to Evo Morales of Bolivia. He's very close to the Cubans. I want to see how much power Vladimir Cerrón is going to have, because that's an indication to tell us where the Castillo presidency is going to take Peru.
The remarks by the government or by people for the government have been consistent with that word nationalization, Joseph. I don't see that they've mitigated that word whatsoever in these last weeks. Nationalize is nationalize. Has that been successful anywhere in Latin America that the Peruvians could point to and say, see, they nationalized their natural resources business and they prospered?
So no, not that I know about. In fact, one of the reons that Evo Morales' government previously in Bolivia didn't nationalize its oil industry was because they were watching the disaster that was happening inside Venezuela, who did nationalize, obviously, not just the oil, but a lot of their industries. And so, you know, there's not any successful example, any successful model to point to. And I think President Castillo hasn't overtly said he's going to do this. But if you listen to his inaugurational speech, the one he gave when back in late July, he hinted at that. He hinted at is basically saying he was going to put the natural resources of the country more to the responses of the people, to provide for the people. He talked about this and that scared people because he didn't use the word nationalization, but he used the word, I think it said state run or state owned economy, which is kind of, you know, synonym of that term. So I think that's what people are concerned about. I don't see him doing that right away. And then I think, you know, as you mentioned, Fransky, one of the reasons he was appointed as the finance minister was to tame that side of the Castillo government and to not look at radical kind of more interventionist or socialist measures to try to figure out how to reform their economy. but I wouldn't put it past them. You know, these are people that come from that line of thinking. They come from the Marxist-Leninist tradition. And so if you leave it to their instincts, they're going to want to nationalize certain industries in Peru, but there's certainly going to be a lot of pressure to not do that. Not just from the mining companies, but from economists, from academia, because I think the Peruvians in general, as the people, know that that doesn't work.
Two names jumped out at me from the Financial Times story. MMG Limited, a subsidiary of China MinMetals Corporation, has a tax stability agreement in place until 2030 at its massive Las Bambas mine high in the Andes near Cusco. China Alco has a similar deal at its Toromocho mine until 2028. Rather than go into where they're located, it's China. Does Peru have a special relationship with China already? I remember early on, even before Castillo inaugurated, he was speaking about China being a rich uncle.
No, absolutely, John. China is their top trade partner. So China is very much a big influential player inside Peru. And I think you hit the nail on the head, John. I think the direction of where Castillo is going to go is not just going to be driven by the internal segments of his political base or even just the private sector inside Peru. I think a lot of it is going to come from these external actors such as China, who has a heavy influence on the Peruvian economy, the large trade partner. And China has specific interests of what they're trying to accomplish in all of South America, and Peru is a critical piece of that puzzle. And I think that that's where his negotiations is going to take him. The critical infrastructure of Peru, whether it's ports, whether it's mining deposits, whether it's river and rail networks, that's what China is looking for. They're looking at being able to gain access to the critical infrastructure of Peru. And I think under President Castillo, they're going to have a great opportunity to do that, because I think President Castillo is going to probably try to align his foreign policy away from the United States and even greater to China, even though that's been the trajectory over the last years. He may accelerate that. So I think China may end up coming out the winner inside Peru and may dictate some of the policies that the President Castillo will implement.
One more paradox, not from Lima, not from Beijing, but from the Andes. The Financial Times. Many who voted for him in June's election are from poor, remote mining areas of the Andes, and their expectations for wealth redistribution are sky high. They want the government to deliver on its campaign promise of, quote, no more poor people in a rich country. Joseph, that is more than socialism. They're talking about confiscation.
Yeah, I mean, this is the reason we've had such a big capital flight from Peru. I think it's upwards of $14 billion has left the country. As I mentioned before, this is why the Peruvian stock exchange almost collapsed the day he was inaugurated. The currency, the sol, the Peruvian currency is at an all-time low over the last decade. One of the big reasons that we're seeing this economic market reaction is because of that, is because everyone is concerned that President Castillo is going to govern the country in the same way that Evo Morales did Bolivia, Hugo Chavez and Nicolas Maduro did in Venezuela, or Daniel Ortega did in Nicaragua, which a part of that is destroying your economy. And I think that for Peruvians, that's their biggest fear, because as I mentioned before, they had to claw and to climb their way out of an economic recession back in the 90s. And actually became a success story. I mean, people were talking in the early part of the century, John, between 2000 and 2010, people were talking about Peru as the next Chile because of their heavy, rich natural resources, but because they liberalized their market, they opened up to free trade, they opened up, they diminished barriers of entry into the market. Now that didn't go 100%, you know, where the country was able to diminish inequality or anything like that, but it did take Peru from a country that was struggling economically to a country that was thriving. And the people felt that if you went to Lima in the beginning of 2000 and then you went to Lima in the 2010 or 2013-14, you saw a very different city. And I think that that's what people are most scared of.
Joseph Umar, the executive director of Secure Free Society. He's traveling. He's in Colombia, Medellin. When we come back, the Afghan tragedy. What does it mean for the capitals of Latin America on both sides of the question of the United States' credibility? This is the New World Report. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.